heroic comebacks, last-minute rockets, attempted murder, and an earthquake that tore the Mel Park pitch asunder.
Seriously.
Welcome to the Roy of the Rovers Totally Football Show Special. Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Totally Football Show. As you might have heard, we are the official shirt sponsors of Melchester Rovers in the brand new Roy of the Rovers graphic novels and books, and we're very proud of it. It's all a bit different now. Roy is 17, Melchester Rovers are in League 2, Mighty Mouse is the manager, and football has changed. With me in the studio to discuss this dramatic reboot, Football 365's very own comic book hero, Johnny Nicholson.
Hello.
And two of Roy's new writers, Tom Palmer, who wrote the novel Scouted of Roy the Rovers, and Rob Williams, who wrote the graphic novel Kickoff. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello. Thanks for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure to have you here. Johnny, you wrote a magnificent article on Roy the Rovers on Football 365 a couple of years ago now, wasn't it? What does Roy mean to you as someone who grew up reading the comics?
Well, I think it's really fascinating how these characters and stories become part of not just of your childhood, but of your burgeoning imagination. And I think that as a writer, and I'm a novelist as well as a football writer, they were my earliest influences in stimulating my imagination to create other worlds. They were examples of places which kind of felt like they really existed, but obviously were fictional, but you felt them to be kind of real. And when it comes to writing novels, as I do now, that's essentially what you're doing. You're creating a world which doesn't exist, but which people think really does, and fictional people who appear to be real. And that's really what Roy provoked me from an early age. I started reading in about 68 or 69. All the way through till I was about 13 or 14 when puberty kicked in and rock and roll and intoxicants felt like a better option than Roy. But up until that point, it was really an important thing, not just Roy of the Rovers, but all comics. Any comic that had football in, I wanted to read them. So Roy was quintessential in being an inspiration to me, as it turned out, as I was a writer in later life.
Tom Palmer, did you have a similar kind of inspiration from the stories of comic books when you were young?
More magazines, I suppose, including Roy. I struggled a lot with reading. I didn't want to read fiction or non-fiction or anything like that. But I was all right with short stuff like newspaper, match reports, but also magazines. So I'd read stuff like Roy and Shoot and stuff like that. And that's where my reading began, really, definitely.
Rob, similar story for you?
Yeah, I mean, I read Roy of the Rovers as a kid. I got it delivered from a newsagent, which, you know, sounds like something from a different age now. But you realise, I mean, you know, writing Roy now, it's funny, you come back to a lot of these stories, and why we love sports in general is sort of they are sort of primal drama. They are sort of David versus Goliath tales, you know what I mean? And sort of that's what you got in Roy back then, and that's what we're providing now at the end of the day. And, you know, we've taken Roy back to a position where Melchester Rovers are the underdogs now, and everyone loves rooting for an underdog.
Now, in a moment, we're going to talk to you both about the challenges of rebooting Roy Race. In the meantime, I'd like us all to have a listen to the work of your predecessors. This is the moment when Roy Race was shot, of course, actually shot. And it's brought to you now by the Friends of Muddy Knees Media Amateur Dramatic Society.
There was one message on Roy's answering machine. A very sinister message.
Just you watch it, Race. Over your shoulder. I don't care how famous you are. I'm going to get back at you somehow, and that is a promise.
Trevor Brinsden, the fanatical fan I banned from Melchester's home games for the rest of the season. It has to be. Good grief. I seem to be surrounded by enemies at the moment.
A sea of glowering faces swam into Roy's mind.
Arnie Mekiff, Vic Guthrie, Trevor Brinsden, Elton Blake. He's convinced I got him sacked from the leading role in that TV series about the Rovers. And Arthur Logan, so bitter because his son Kenny signed for Rovers instead of entering the family business.
Engrossed in his thoughts, Roy never heard the office door ease open.
No wonder the police offered me protection. Maybe I should telephone them right now and...
Thank you.
How bad is it, Doctor? Will he... is he going to...
We can't be certain of anything at the moment, Mrs. Race. Fortunately, the bullet merely creased your husband's head. But now, he's in deep shock. A kind of coma, if you like. And we're not sure what's causing it. Most of the human brain is still a mystery to us. Roy could recover at any moment, or he could remain in that comatose state for days, perhaps weeks. All we can do is wait and hope.
You'll make it, Racy. You've got to.
As the news spread, they began to gather silently at Melchester Stadium. Men, women and children, people who had never watched a football match in their lives.
Yeah, that right there is Muddy Knees Media's new direction. Some pretty high drama. How are you going to match that?
Well, it's going to be difficult, isn't it, Rob?
I don't think we can actually sort of match the medical knowledge of that brain doctor who basically said, the brain's a mystery. We don't really know. He can wake up in weeks, days, whatever.
He also appeared to be smoking at one point. He seemed to be drawing on an extremely strong cigarette.
It was a long time ago. It was a different age. World, yeah.
We are matching it for drama in some ways, aren't we? The storylines we're putting in, there's some decent
Well, absolutely.
Events,
I mean, there's Roy's father who has had a brain tumour.
Indeed, yeah.
Hasn't recovered as fully as Roy did.
That's a really important part of the story. When we were deciding the story together, when we were devising it, that he was going to be ill was going to be an aspect of the story. And we thought it was... I go into a lot of schools and I meet a lot of children who are carers. We thought making him a carer and making that... He can't just ease into football, can he? He can't just become a great footballer. So that's one of his things, and that is one of the big things in the first graphic novel, isn't it? That sort of gets in his way, that he's the priority is being a carer, not a wannabe footballer.
Definitely. Yeah, and his dad's Melchester Rovers' biggest fan. It's trying to create a Roy who's 17 in the news stories, and. He's the underdog, as we said, and he is kind of in a position when we first meet him. He's got a trial, and he is for Melchester, but even then, even when he gets his big chance, he has to run home because his dad's unwell and his mum needs help caring for his dad. So it's blatantly trying to make him a sort of sympathetic character that we can all get on board with.
Otherwise, really. The precociously talented
exactly.
Footballer is going to be the kind of person you just want to hit.
Yeah, and there is that. It's constantly in the talks we had, the team who sort of put this all together, this reboot, was like, how can we make A. Roy sort of accessible to a new generation? These books are aimed at a young adult sort of audience. Trying to make Roy a character that they can relate to and they can kind of go, yeah, that's the type of kid I want to root for, basically.
And these are serious storylines, which is kind of a contrast to some of the storylines that we saw in the last 10 to 15 years of old Roy. Johnny, I'll go to you first. The most ridiculous Roy Race storyline from the end game.
Well, there's a good amount of choice to be had, but I think the terrorist incident has to be one of the best ones, in the sense that I remember when I was writing that piece about them, I went back and I read bits of it online. It was really brutal. I mean, you really wouldn't want... I don't think you would expose kids quite to that these days. It was actually quite distasteful.
Well, 8 or 9 players died, didn't they?
Yeah. And it's just really... I wasn't a kid when that came out, but I tried to put myself as a 10-year-old boy reading that. I think I would have been really upset.
I was quite unsettled by the earthquake that tore Melchester Stadium asunder. That was a weird one.
Rare in the larger Melchester area, has to say.
There has been fracking in the area. It could, but I'm not here to say that's the cause.
I'm thinking sort of give him, maybe a bit later on, but give him a political career, which could begin this week, actually, when Theresa May, who knows what's going to happen, and we could have an election, and Roy Race could step up and, because of the kind of guy he is, sort it all out.
I could see
us.
This Roy being very much about bringing the country together, but old Roy, I think, would be very much leave. It'd be absolutely no deal.
Yeah.
Well, he had an international, there was international players in his, how would that affect the classic Melchester team if Paco Díaz had to leave or,
But I think the ultimate, because there was a lot of players from lots of different countries, aren't there, in the new Melchester Rovers team. So he is a Europhile in
true. Whereas Roy, of course, has been kidnapped 9 times, often by foreign people. So again, that could have an effect. We joke, of course. But when you go back to Giles Smith did the autobiography of Roy a few years ago. It's a very funny book, really highly recommend it. But it was so funny because it was these ridiculous storylines that were presented in such a straight-faced way that it, for me, it was kind of, this is why it's still not going anymore. And for you, it must be useful to have that because you've got a fresh slate. It's almost like people are ready now.
Yeah, I read that. I really enjoyed that book. But he came across as incredibly naive, didn't he, about everything that was going on in the world. But I think the Roy that we've created together is, he's thoughtful. And I think the big thing about him is he learns and something happens and he learns and he moves on, doesn't he? And he's got that in both the novels and the graphic novels. He's a young lad, but he is learning. I wanted to mention something about us knowing about his family and about his life. And I was quite influenced by Raheem Sterling did an article before the World Cup, and I'm sure you read it, about what his mum had done to get him to be a footballer and how she'd worked 3 or 4 different jobs and tried to get to university and really worked hard. And I was really impressed. I had an attitude towards Raheem Sterling from the media before I'd read that article, but because I found out about him and his family's situation, I thought that was amazing that you saw, because footballers aren't just what we see in the media, are they? They do have that, a real life and real relationships. And so things like that, reading autobiographies, especially the first 50 pages of a footballer's autobiography and articles like that, help me sort of devising the character, definitely.
Rob, when you were first told about the reboot and that you were coming in to do it, how did you feel? It must have been quite a lot of pressure picking up something like this.
My past is with comics, writing comics for the last sort of 15 years, and I've been fortunate enough to write a lot of very famous characters, whether it's Spider-Man or Superman and things like that. So in that sense, I'm kind of used to it. But it's still, I mean, I think you never really lose the fact that you're kind of nostalgist. And if I'd never read Roy as a kid, it'd be a different thing. It'd be just another gig. But, you know, I did read Roy, as I said. I mean, I got Roy Over Rovers delivered once a week. I read The Hard Man. I read Mighty Mouse. I read those strips. So it's a thrill. And also I've got 2 kids of my own, like my son's 12 and my daughter's 9, so to sort of write something that's aimed at their generation is great as well. Is sort of, so in a way it's sort of taking me back to when I was a kid, and also it's trying to sort of focus my storytelling in a way that actually sort of something that appeals to them.
And Tom, you've worked on the novel while Rob's worked on the graphic novel.
Yeah.
How closely have you two worked in order to sort of keep the timeline pure?
I think it's been really good. We met and we thrashed out a few ideas for stories, like as a group, including Ben, the illustrator. We developed ideas, and then as we're each writing our own, we sort of refer to each other. We know where we're going to be in the storyline, but we also sort of show each other the manuscript so that we can trail things or create echoes of things that have happened in the other books. And for me, we haven't had to sit down for hours and hours and hours, but we've done it in quite a relaxed way, which has really worked for me.
Yeah. I mean, there's a team, there's Rob Power, who's and Keith Richardson, who are part of our editorial team, and, a bunch of us got together in a little writer's room. We worked out the overall sort of, here's where we're going. Then we have a certain amount of freedom, individually to sort of get to those points, but we have certain beats that we have to meet, which makes it a lot richer, I think,
I really like it. I think it's, because it's not a blank page. They're not restrictions, but you've got to fit into like the narrative that's come before and the narrative that's sometimes like the next one I'm writing, the graphic novel, and before and after it have already been written like in draft form anyway. And that, for me, that I find that really exciting, not a problem. In fact, it is like it's enriching in a way, definitely.
Yeah, we know if there's an earthquake coming, we can plan ahead, is what we're saying. Yeah.
And of course, Johnny, you've just seen a copy of the graphic novel, and people of our age, when it comes to reboots, the first thing we're looking for are the Easter eggs, the little references that have been laid down for our generation. What are the ones that you've picked out?
Johnny Dexter as a youth team coach?
Ah, yes, the ultimate comic book hard man. How long did it take for you to get there? Or was he always in your mind instantly as the person you wanted as sort of Roy's mentor?
He was always there. I mean, it was just, again, because I read the comics as a kid, Johnny Dexter, the hard man, he played for Melchester at one point. He had his own strip prior to that, and Mighty Mouse did too. And
Mighty Mouse, of course, is a manager now.
He is a manager of Melchester in our reboot. And sort of, you know, so, I mean, what we're trying to do is make these new books accessible for 17-year-olds or 15-year-olds or whatever. So if you've never read a Roy Rovers comic before, you know, you should be able to pick these up or the book up and you'll get it. But if you are an old-time fan, you will see these old characters, but just kind of like given with the serial numbers filed off and given a bit of a new life, you know.
Tom, was part of the process going through the back issues and like picking out old stories that you could refer back to?
Yes, I've got a mate called Simon Robinson who's a head teacher in Derbyshire, and I went round and he's got pretty much them all in his house, and he's got a room full
of
comics.
Can I go round?
Yeah, you can come. He'd love it.
I'll bring him stuff.
Yeah, but he's got all these, and we just looked through them all. And I was developing the first stories, and he helped me. Sort of, he found like the one the shooting one that you just sort of wonderfully reenacted.
It was beautiful.
But he reads them as well because he knows more about Roy the Rovers than I do, and he reads them and he helps me out like with the odd. He's sort of my what's the word for it?
Mentor.
Yeah, mentor.
Roy mentor.
And of course, you've got so many new themes in the, particularly in the novel. I noticed that Roy is a keen player of FIFA on his PlayStation.
He is, yeah. And for Roy, he plays FIFA with his dad. His dad's half paralysed and can't speak, and he does that too. And he plays as Melchester Rovers, who they both support, and he does that to entertain his dad. And for me, that's really my dad. My dad had exactly the same condition that Roy's dad's got in the books. And for me, I love writing. I mean, it's 25 years ago, but I love writing about it. And I'm hoping that because I've been through that, it sort of adds to its authenticity.
And those passages in the book, some of them are very, very moving. Particularly the going to games with your dad and those conversations and that bonding.
And loads of fans know that experience, don't they?
Yeah, that was resonating for me when I read it. So that was drawn from your own personal experience.
It was, yes.
Do you think that the audience for this would demand something different to the audience of the past in the 50s and 60s and 70s? Is it very different writing for young people now than it would have been back then?
It's really hard to say, isn't it? Because you read books from the past and you read sort of cartoons from the past, and some of them seem a bit silly. But no doubt in 30 years, my stuff will seem really silly. And so they do demand things, but I suppose it's hardwired into your brain. Like, I've got a 15-year-old daughter as well, so I've for the last sort of 15 years, I've known her and her mates, so I know that generation like Rob does with his children. And so not consciously.
It's a really interesting challenge writing a comic book hero now, because you go back to the 50s and 60s and 70s, the kind of stuff that Johnny and I grew up reading, Battle and Commando and Roy of the Rovers and everything else that went with it. But there haven't really been any comic books like that. If anything, it shifted into a sort of comic book anti-hero with Preacher and Walking Dead and things like that. It must be really interesting to go the other end of the sort of character spectrum.
Well, it all goes around with sort of how people react to their football heroes. You know, if you look about when there was a Gary Lineker in the 80s or something, he was this sort of clean-cut figure at the time, you know, and then it went to a Beckham or something, and people sort of love pulling their heroes apart. And the same thing happens in fiction, you know, with the comics you talk about. I mean, Roy is not there yet. He's not really a Beckham yet. He's more a kind of, in our stories, like you say, he's starting out on his journey. Maybe he'll get there. But I think it's kind of, I don't know, it feels like it's refreshingly positive, and we're kind of reaching for the spirit of the game, you know, rather than going, he's got a chance to get the riches, he's got a chance to get the flash car. It's more about the purity of why we all love football and you know, the chance of, you know, what never goes away is him, you know, someone scores the last minute winner. There's a glory in that, you know, in that moment. And that's kind of, I think, what we're reaching for in this new version of Roy, rather than, oh, you'll have an Aston Martin in 2 years, you know?
And this a player as well. He's a fan of the club, and we see him as a fan. Initially, we see him as a fan of the club, don't we, in both sets of books. And he ends up, like, playing for his team that he loves, even though they're right way down the bottom of League Two. There's just, you look at what the horizons, the possible horizons are, and try and reach them.
And this is something Johnny's written about quite a lot, about the lack of positivity in football, which has been a real trend across all of football discourse.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think in the social media age, we live in a very cynical kind of age where there is more kudos to ripping people apart than there is to saying good things about them. And what I've found in recent years with my writing is the more positive pieces get the biggest responses. And so what you're saying about these being positive stories, which are uplifting, I think is very much the zeitgeist of the times. And I know that this in some ways is counterintuitive to what people think, but think that it's all about being snarky on Twitter and things. But I think that as humans, we respond to positive stories. We actually want them in our lives. And I think there's a great thirst for that now. I should also say, I think the brilliant thing about this is that it is fictional. It's about a fictional player and a fictional club. And I think if you're young and your exposure to football and football games is through FIFA and things like that, this is they're all inverted commas real people, you know, who are used in the games. And this isn't that. And I think the brilliant thing about that is it allows your imagination to fill in all of the dots. It's not confusing it with reality, you know, so you don't, you know, there isn't anything, you don't have to compare it with how Neymar is in real life. You know, these are a world in and of themselves. And I think that allows you to escape into it more without being kind of reeled back in by the certainties of actuality, if you know what I mean.
And there have been so many issues in the books that you know aren't often sort of popping up at this level, with the issues over disability that we've discussed. You've also got in the novel Fionn, the leading women's footballer in the area, and also Scourge of the Bullies. A question of loyalty to your local team as well, because obviously Melchester Rovers have fallen on hard times, and Roy's actually being bullied by two supporters of the local rivals who may or may not have any kind of resemblance to Manchester City. But has there been any sort of backlash? Because these books have been out a few weeks now. Have you had the inevitable, "Is political correctness gone mad"?
I think you get that, but I suspect when you've come across little bits of that on social media, they haven't actually read the books, people who say that, you know. It's but it, at the end of the day, you know, you're always going to get people who go, "Oh, it's not as good as it was in my day," you know. But at the end of
nothing all, ever is.
No, exactly. All we can do is kind of, you know, try and tell the best stories we can tell, to be honest with you. And we try and make it sort of something that's relevant to today's football. Like you mentioned, Melchester's local rivals here, Tynecastre, who have been taken over by a you know, United Arab Emirates kind of prince, and all the money's come in, and they've got all their players are being paid about, you know, $300,000 a week. And Melchester, what it does is it allows us to set up that Rocky-ish sort of underdog sort of thing where you immediately, hopefully, root for Melchester and the kids. And just when we join the story, Melchester have fallen on such hard times they have to sell off their entire first team, which is why the kids get a chance. And so Roy and his contemporaries, and you get your Lofty Peaks and Vic Guthries and people like that, they all suddenly are thrust into first team positions. So it should be easy to root for them, you know what I mean, and want them to win, because from the word go, no one gives them a chance.
It also gives you so much scope for development, doesn't it?
It does, and I think one of the things you mentioned as well, like Fionn, who's a really good young footballer, and also Roy's sister as well, Rocky, that we're really sort of putting a strong line of like the women's game into it, because I've written children's books before, and often with girls as the main characters in them, and I've had a really good response to that, and we are with this as well, aren't we? And that is going to be a part of the story. It's going to be, and there's scenes where Roy is faced with his own prejudices about about girls playing football, and he learns really good lessons, and he remembers those lessons, and I think having people like Fionn in it and Rocky has really worked for me writing the stories. Yeah, definitely.
Johnny, where can you see something like that? What are the pitfalls that Roy could encounter on his way up the pyramid?
Well, I suppose the trappings of fame and money are always, you know, it's an eternal story of the you know, of the good man who's corrupted by the evil world into which he's landed. And I think there is a... you know, you could take this in a kind of Rake's Progress kind of way, couldn't you, in some senses, you know? And you could have, I mean, a story arc where, you know, he's a great talent, but he's brought low by the foibles of humanity. And I may be getting too serious about it there. But I think that is very interesting because there are so many issues that come with football that aren't to do with football anymore. Whereas I think when Roy first started, it was pretty much all to do with football, the kicky-kicky. But now there's so much to do with society and politics and money and so many other things that, you know, there's any number of directions you could obviously take it in.
At the start of a second graphic novel, he has like an agent turn up at his front door in a flash car and sort of offers to give him a lift. Mm. And sort of, you know, fills his head with all these wonders. But the agent doesn't get his name right, you know what I mean? He says, I'll be with you every step of the way, son, you know what I mean? And but he calls him Rod, you know, as he lets him out. So, I mean, we're kind of going down that road, you know. The more successful he gets, the more these trappings are going to come in. But I think the touchstone is always sort of, you know, the love of the game, you know?
What challenges is Roy going to face without giving too much away as this story develops?
One of them is ego. One of them is ego. One of them's entrapment, like social media entrapment, and all sorts of stuff, like the kind of things that would happen to someone at that level. But as hopefully his career becomes as Melchester hopefully do better, he could face all sorts of things, couldn't he? But at the moment, he's facing small scale issues like that, I think.
Yeah, I think it was one of the last email back and forths we did. You talked about sort of the nutritional side of it and everything. And I think it's kind of, we're constantly aware of, you know, this is a 2018, 2019 Roy, you know, what's relevant out there now, you know. So, we try and reflect that and hopefully make it a story that kids these days will actually, you know, relate.
And how many books are there planned now?
Three graphic novels, three novels a season, and it could go, I mean, what, he's 17, so, I mean, we could go, he could play till he's 40, couldn't he, or something?
Is that how it's going to run? Three books, three graphic novels per season of his life?
That's
and
right,
and then on and upwards?
That's a loose plan. I mean, there may be other things along the way. I mean, there's plans for, like, a you know, the women's football side of it as well, to, you know, to give that its own title, as, you know, along the way. So, yeah, we got really rich plans. We're opening up this world. There's all kinds of things we could do with it. This is just the start.
Well, it looks incredibly exciting. Rob, your graphic novel, Kickoff, is out now. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Tom, your wonderful novel, Scouted, that's also out now.
Thank you.
Johnny, you haven't got a Roy the Rovers novel, but you do have 18 Teesside-based crime drama novels.
I have 14 Teesside novels and a couple set in America about a rock and roll photographer. Yeah, so Roy the Rovers only in America with rock and roll.
Excellent. Where can we find those?
They're all on the usual outlets, non-tax-paying ones, as well as actual shops.
And that's just about all we've got time for. But you can find out everything you want to know about Roy of the Rovers on royoftheroversofficial.com or by following Roy of the Rovers on Twitter. The book Scouted, the graphic novel Kickoff, they're available now. There's more to come. They're available in all good bookshops and online. Enjoy. Enjoy.